today starts with a privacy tool becoming a policy problem. The useful signal is not that VPNs suddenly changed. It is that an age verification debate is beginning to describe VPNs as a loophole, and that framing can spread from child safety enforcement into broader assumptions about identity, location, and trust online.
Right, and that is why this is more than a policy headline. A VPN is ordinary infrastructure for a lot of people, remote workers, journalists, travelers, home lab users, security teams, and anyone trying to reduce tracking. Once policy documents begin treating that same tool as a bypass mechanism, the design question changes. We have to ask what the enforcement layer does to privacy and what new risks it creates.
We are going to use a selective radar today, then slow down on that governance and security question. The radar has the VPN story, a Linux kernel exploit lane, a positive Linux firmware funding update, a local inference home lab benchmark, and a programming runtime watch item that is not strong enough for a full claim yet.
The connecting thread is control surfaces, who controls identity checks, who maintains firmware update infrastructure, who patches kernel exposure, who can still run local inference without depending entirely on hosted systems. These are different stories, but they all ask whether infrastructure remains user-serving, resilient, and inspectable.
Let's start with the VPN item. The reported claim is that a European Parliamentary Research Service framing treats VPNs as a loophole in age verification systems. What is the concrete change in posture there?
The change is that VPNs move from background privacy tooling into the compliance conversation. Age checks rely on knowing something about the user, the device, the account, or the jurisdiction. A VPN can obscure jurisdiction and sometimes frustrate enforcement. If regulators describe that as a loophole, they may start looking for obligations on platforms, age verification vendors, app stores, or VPN providers.
The word loophole sounds small, but it does a lot of work. It suggests that using a privacy tool is not just a choice, it might become evidence that the user is bypassing a safety system.
Exactly. That is the tension. Child safety policy is politically powerful, but the mechanism matters. If age verification means more centralized identity checks, more device-bound credentials, or more friction around privacy tools, then the policy creates security architecture. It can protect minors in one context while creating a sensitive identity layer that attackers, advertisers, or future regulators may want to exploit.
There is also a technical counterpoint in the briefing. Official or semi-official age verification tooling can have flaws of its own. That makes the trade-off less clean than verify age and solve the problem.
Yes. If an age verification app has privacy or security defects, the enforcement mechanism becomes a risk surface. The policy may reduce one category of harm but introduce another. That is why the correct question is not just whether age checks are legitimate. It is where the check happens, what data is retained, how much trust is centralized, and whether the design has privacy, preserving alternatives.
The Hacker News discussion around the item also seemed to push on where identity should be checked. Some people argued about government renewal points or other less repetitive flows instead of forcing every platform to run its own identity gate.
That is a useful line of argument. If every site or app runs a separate identity ritual, the surface area expands. You get more vendors, more databases, more device prompts, and more incentives to store proof. A more centralized or government-mediated approach has its own problems, but it at least reveals the architecture question. The real debate is not age checks, yes or no. It is which institutions get to mediate access and what privacy guarantees are technically enforceable.
For someone running self-hosted services, agent tooling, or browser automation, what should they take from this without overreacting?
I would treat it as a watch posture update. Do not assume VPN restrictions are imminent from this report alone, but do watch whether future rules start classifying VPN usage, location ambiguity, or anonymous access as suspicious. If that posture hardens, it can affect platform sign, inflows, API access, fraud scoring, App Store rules, and the way automation environments prove they are legitimate.
So the action is not change your stack today. It is track whether identity, location, and privacy tooling become coupled in policy and product design.
Mm-hmm. That is the right level. The concrete risk is coupling. A service that says, we need age assurance, may eventually also say, we do not trust privacy, preserving routing. A platform that says, we must comply with regional rules, may begin to degrade access for users behind VPNs. Those are architecture consequences, even if the current item is only a policy signal.
Let's move to the second lane, DirtyFrag. The briefing treats it as a Linux local privilege escalation watch item related to page cache manipulation and a newer RPC-related issue. What matters here for operators?
The first operator takeaway is that this is local privilege escalation, not remote compromise by itself. That distinction matters, but it does not make the issue harmless. If an attacker already has a foothold as a local user, container escape candidate, compromised service account, or untrusted workload, local escalation can turn limited access into root access. So the patch posture matters.
The second point is the disclosure timing. The coverage suggests the normal coordination window became compressed, with exploit details becoming public quickly.
That makes distro-specific verification important. Kernel vulnerabilities often travel through upstream fixes, stable trees, vendor backports, and distribution advisories. The headline can arrive before every fleet actually has a package. For a home lab or small server estate, that means checking your distribution advisories instead of assuming that one article equals one universal state.
The exploit mechanics also seem easy to oversimplify. Page cache manipulation sounds familiar because of previous named bugs, but the current story reportedly combines that family of behavior with a new issue.
Yes. And that is why I would avoid turning this into a detailed mitigation recipe from secondary reporting alone. The reliable lesson is not a single magic command. It is that Linux kernel memory and page cache behavior remains an active exploit research surface, and local privilege boundaries still matter on shared boxes, container hosts, developer machines, and exposed services.
Practical posture then, keep kernel and distro updates current, watch advisories, and be careful with untrusted local workloads.
Exactly. Also separate urgency by exposure. A single-user desktop has a different risk profile than a multi-user shell host or a server running internet, facing services that might create a low-privilege foothold. DirtyFrag belongs on the security radar because it can change the blast radius after initial access, not because every machine is immediately equally exposed.
The third item is much more positive, Dell and Lenovo reportedly becoming premier sponsors of LVFSS. Why does that deserve space next to security and policy items?
Because firmware update infrastructure is security infrastructure. LVFS is one of those commons projects that most users only notice when it fails. It helps Linux systems receive firmware updates in a way that is integrated with the desktop and tooling. If major vendors fund it directly, that reduces the burden on unpaid maintainers and makes Linux hardware maintenance more sustainable.
The amount reported is $100,000 per year from each vendor, not enormous compared with the companies, but meaningful for a shared infrastructure project.
It is meaningful because it acknowledges value. LVFS had been applying pressure around vendor usage, including reduced analytics for companies using the service without supporting it. Sponsorship from Dell and Lenovo says that at least two major vendors understand that Linux users are customers too, and that firmware delivery is not just a goodwill side project.
There is a broader open source pattern here. Infrastructure becomes critical, then people complain when it is underfunded, then the maintainers have to create leverage.
Yes, and LVFS is a clean example because the benefit is concrete. Firmware updates can fix security issues, hardware bugs, battery behavior, device compatibility, and stability. If vendors want Linux customers to have a safe update path, paying for the service is the responsible move. The watch item is whether more vendors follow or whether this remains a two-vendor relief valve.
The fourth lane is local inference. A Level Untext forum post described running a large Qwen model on two modified older graphics cards connected with NVLink. Why include a community report at all?
Because it is specific enough to be useful as a replication lead, not because it is a definitive benchmark. The post describes a budget-conscious home server setup with two modified cards, a larger memory envelope than stock cards, and quantized model serving. For people experimenting with local inference, That kind of concrete configuration can reveal what older hardware still makes possible.
The briefing is careful not to turn it into a routing recommendation. What should listeners keep provisional?
Almost everything beyond the architectural hint. Single-user community reports can depend on model version, quantization format, driver behavior, serving stack, prompt mix, concurrency pattern, and thermal constraints. The strong takeaway is that older multi-GPU setups can still have experimental value when memory and interconnect line up. The weak takeaway would be any universal claim about throughput or cost-effectiveness.
This also fits the user's local inference interest, not just the newest accelerator, but what can be done with real, obtainable hardware.
Right. The practical question is whether a home lab can run useful models with acceptable latency, concurrency, and memory trade-offs. A modified older dual card setup is not plug-and-play advice, but it is evidence that the ceiling for experimentation is higher than a simple spec sheet comparison might suggest.
The last radar item is Bun's reported Rust rewrite compatibility milestone. We are deliberately keeping it as a watch item because the source capture was noisy. What is safe to say?
Safe to say, there is a community visible claim that Bun's experimental rewrite from Zig toward Rust reached a very high test compatibility milestone on a Linux desktop target. Also safe to say, the accessible evidence in this run was too dependent on a social post and platform Chrome to support a deep technical segment. The right move is to wait for an official blog post, repository artifact, or release note.
If the claim becomes official, it could matter because a runtime rewriting core implementation language is a real systems bet.
Yes. Language migrations and runtimes affect maintainability, contributor pool, memory safety, performance assumptions, and ecosystem trust. But today it remains a lead, not a conclusion. The healthy editorial move is to mark the signal and avoid letting a headline become an unsupported architecture claim.
That completes the radar. Now let's deepen the main thread. When a governance system tries to control access, it becomes security architecture. Start with the age verification problem. What are the design choices that matter most?
The first choice is what proof is required. A system might ask for a government credential, a payment card, a device attestation, a third-party token, an account, age signal, or some form of privacy, preserving credential. Each proof has different consequences. Some reveal identity directly. Some reveal attributes. Some bind the user to a device. Some create durable records. The policy slogan hides those engineering choices.
The second choice is who performs the check.
Exactly. A platform run check means every platform becomes a partial identity verifier. A centralized government check can reduce repetition but increases institutional sensitivity. A third-party age verification vendor creates a new intermediary. A device or app store level system can make the control feel seamless, but it also moves gatekeeping into the operating system or distribution layer. None of those choices is neutral.
And the VPN enters because it undermines location or jurisdiction assumptions.
Yes. If enforcement depends on geography, a VPN complicates that. If enforcement depends on device or account trust, a VPN may still be tolerated. If enforcement treats obscured location as suspicious by itself, then privacy routing becomes part of the risk score. That is where the governance story touches everyday infrastructure. Users may not be trying to bypass age checks. They may simply be using a normal privacy or work tool.
So one danger is false inference. The system sees a VPN and infers bad intent.
That is a major danger. Security systems already struggle with context. The same signal can mean fraud, privacy, travel, corporate policy, censorship avoidance, or ordinary network hygiene. If policy pushes companies toward blunt enforcement, they may prefer easy signals over nuanced ones. That can create blocks, extra checks, account friction, or reduced functionality for legitimate users.
What would a better design direction look like if policymakers do want age assurance?
Better design would minimize data collection, separate attribute proof from identity proof, reduce repeated disclosure, and make the verifier's obligations explicit. A privacy, preserving credential that says this person meets an age threshold is different from uploading identity documents to many platforms. Even then, implementation details matter: key storage, revocation, auditability, vendor incentives, and how exceptions are handled.
The briefing does not claim that privacy-preserving credentials are already the chosen path. It raises them as a possible alternative to CRUDR blocking.
That is the right boundary. The current evidence is a policy and reporting signal, not a settled architecture. But the alternative paths are important because otherwise the debate becomes binary, either no age checks or maximal identity gates. Real systems have more degrees of freedom. The question is whether regulators and vendors choose the least intrusive workable option or the easiest enforceable one.
Let's connect that to cybersecurity. A system designed for compliance can itself become an attack target.
Absolutely. If a vendor collects identity documents, face scans, age tokens, account mappings, or device identifiers, that data becomes valuable. If an app verifies age poorly, it can leak or expose sensitive information. If every platform integrates a third-party verification service, that service becomes part of the trust chain. The safety goal does not cancel the security analysis, it intensifies it.
This is why the dirty frag item belongs in the same episode. The details are very different, but both stories are about hidden layers that users rely on.
Yes. With dirty frag, the hidden layer is the kernel boundary. With age verification, it is the identity and access boundary. With LVFs, it is firmware update distribution. In each case, users experience a simple surface. The server runs, the app opens, the laptop updates, the website admits or blocks. Underneath, there are trust decisions and maintenance obligations that determine the real risk.
For the kernel exploit lane, what is the comparable design lesson?
The lesson is that privilege boundaries are never purely theoretical. A local bug may sound less dramatic than a remote exploit, but systems are layered. A web app bug, a container escape path, a malicious package, or a compromised account can provide a starting point. The local privilege escalation bug determines whether that starting point becomes full system control.
That is useful for home labs in particular. People often expose a mix of services, containers, old hardware, and experimental software.
Exactly. Home labs are not enterprise fleets, but they are often more heterogeneous and less formally monitored. The practical posture is boring and powerful. Update kernels, retire unsupported systems, avoid unnecessary local users, limit container privileges, and treat patch windows as real. Dirty frag is a named reminder of that general discipline.
With LVFs, the design lesson is almost the opposite. A quiet shared service reduces risk when vendors support it.
That's right. Firmware is often below the operating system, which makes bad firmware update paths especially painful. A well-maintained Linux firmware service gives users a normal way to receive updates instead of booting into another operating system, hunting vendor pages, or ignoring firmware entirely. Vendor sponsorship improves the odds that this path remains reliable.
There is also a governance angle in LVFS. The maintainers reportedly used analytics access and usage transparency as leverage.
That is a reasonable common strategy. If vendors benefit from a shared service without funding it, maintainers need a way to signal that the arrangement is unfair. Reducing premium visibility or calling attention to usage can create pressure without cutting off users. It is a softer version of infrastructure governance. Align vendor incentives with the work that keeps users safe.
That makes the daily picture more balanced. Not all governance is bad control. Some governance keeps shared infrastructure alive.
Exactly. The key is whether governance is accountable to users and aligned with system safety. LVF's funding is a positive example because it supports maintenance. WhoPN loophole framing is a riskier example because it may constrain privacy tooling. Dirty frag disclosure is a messy example because public details can accelerate patching and attacker learning at the same time.
Let's return to local inference for a moment. How does the dual card Quan experiment fit the same control surface theme?
Local inference is partly about agency. If you can run capable models on your own hardware, you reduce dependence on hosted providers for some tasks. That does not mean local is always cheaper, faster, or better, but it changes the trade space. Community benchmarks on older hardware help map what is possible outside the newest cloud accelerators.
The important caveat is that local inference claims are easy to overread.
Very easy. A single setup can look impressive because the workload is favorable, the model is quantized well, the prompt mix is narrow, or the operator has tuned around bottlenecks. That does not diminish the report. It tells us how to use it as a lead for testing. If several independent reports converge, then it becomes stronger evidence for buying, routing, or deployment decisions.
In the context of this episode, the local inference item is not the lead because the evidence is community level, but it still matters because it preserves optionality.
Precisely. Optionality is valuable. The policy world may add identity and access friction. Hosted AI providers may change prices or terms. Hardware supply may be uneven. Being able to run useful inference locally, even imperfectly, gives you a fallback and a laboratory. The benchmark does not settle the architecture. It keeps the design space open.
And the BUN item is similar, a technical watch signal, but not enough to carry the show.
Yes. Runtime implementation language matters, but we need clean evidence. A social claim about compatibility is interesting. A release note explaining which subsystems moved, what tests passed, what performance changed, and what risks remain would be much more useful. Until then, it belongs in the watch for confirmation bucket.
I want to draw out a recurring evaluation habit here. We are not ranking stories by drama. We are ranking by what changes decisions.
That's the right lens. The VPN story changes the watch posture around privacy tooling and age verification architecture. Dirty Fried changes patch attention. LVF sponsorship changes confidence in a maintenance commons. The Quinn report changes what you may want to test in a home lab. The BUN claim changes what to monitor, but not what to believe yet.
Let's give listeners a practical checklist from the deep dive. If they care about privacy tooling and automation, what should they watch in the EU age verification lane?
First, watch for concrete obligations rather than broad language. Does a proposal target platforms, identity vendors, app stores, network providers, or VPN providers? Second, watch what proof is required. Attribute proof is less invasive than full identity collection. Third, watch whether VPN usage becomes a negative signal in account or platform systems. That is the spillover risk for ordinary users.
Fourth, watch whether the enforcement design has an appeal or exception path.
Yes. Automated gatekeeping without a good exception path tends to punish edge cases. Travelers, privacy-conscious users, people under censorship pressure, shared households, and users with unusual devices can all be misclassified. A credible system needs not only a rule but a recovery path when the rule is wrong.
On the Linux security side, what should operators do without waiting for a perfect exploit explainer?
Check your distribution security tracker, update where patches are available, and be careful about untrusted local code. For containers, review whether workloads have unnecessary privileges or host mounts. For exposed services, remember that a remote bud plus a local escalation can become one chain. You do not need to panic, but you should avoid treating local privilege escalation as irrelevant.
On firmware, the action is more supportive and strategic.
Right. Keep using the normal Linux firmware update path where appropriate. Notice which vendors support the infrastructure. Vendor behavior around LVF should become part of hardware trust. If two major vendors are willing to fund the commons and others are not, that is a signal about whose Linux customers are being treated seriously.
On local inference, the action is to bookmark and replicate rather than believe the headline.
Exactly. If the older dual card setup is relevant to your own hardware questions, collect comparable metrics, tokens per second, memory usage, prompt length, concurrency, power, thermal behavior, and model quality for your tasks. Community posts are valuable because they suggest experiments, not because they replace your own measurements.
We should also be explicit about what we are not claiming today.
We are not claiming that the EU is about to ban VPNs. We are not claiming Dirty Frag has the same severity for every Linux system. We are not claiming LVF's funding solves open source sustainability. We are not claiming modified older GPUs are the best way to run local inference. And we are not claiming BUN's rewrite milestone is confirmed beyond the watch signal captured today.
That list matters because each story has a tempting overstatement.
It does. Policy stories invite panic. Security stories invite either panic or dismissal. Funding stories invite victory laps. Hardware benchmarks invite shopping conclusions. Runtime rewrite rumors invite language war takes. The briefing is useful only if it resists those reflexes.
Let's talk about how these items affect an agent or automation stack specifically. Where could VPN scrutiny show up first?
It could show up in sign, in friction, location, sensitive APIs, browser trust systems, anti-abuse scoring, or account recovery. If a workflow runs through privacy-preserving routing, a platform might ask for extra checks or reduce trust. That does not break automation by itself, but it changes reliability assumptions. Agents that depend on web accounts inherit the access policies of those accounts.
And age verification could become another account state dimension that automation has to respect.
Yes. If access depends on a verified attribute, then agents operating on behalf of a user need clear boundaries. What can they do without exposing credentials? How is consent represented? Can an agent perform actions in age-gated environments? The story is early, but it points toward more policy-aware automation environments.
For local infrastructure, dirty frag and LVFS are more immediate.
They are. If you run services, update posture and firmware posture are foundational. Fancy orchestration does not help if the host is stale, firmware is neglected, or privilege boundaries are loose. Today's security and LVFS items are reminders that reliable AI and automation stacks still sit on ordinary systems maintenance. We protect and ethical bookings.
I like that framing. The glamorous layer depends on the boring layer.
It always does. Agents, local models, dashboards, VPNs, browsers, and servers all inherit the trust properties of the operating system, firmware, identity layer, and network environment. The daily briefing's value is noticing when those lower layers shift.
Before the final wrap, I want to spend a few minutes on the governance pattern because it is the part that transfers across all five stories. When an institution says a control is necessary, the next question should be what gets centralized.
That question is the right one. Centralization can be helpful when it reduces repeated risk, but it can also concentrate power and data. An age verification provider may centralize identity attributes. A firmware service centralizes update distribution. A kernel maintainer process centralizes patch review and backport decisions. A hosted AI provider centralizes inference and policy. The difference is whether the central layer is transparent, accountable, and aligned with user safety.
LVFS is interesting because centralization looks beneficial there. Users get a consistent firmware path, vendors get distribution, and maintainers can observe enough usage to keep the service healthy.
Yes, because the central function is narrow and practical. It is not trying to learn who you are or decide whether your network behavior is legitimate. It is trying to deliver firmware updates. There are still trust questions, but the goal is maintenance. That is why vendor funding feels like healthy governance. The companies that benefit from the shared path are helping keep it alive.
The age verification case is harder because the central function can become identity judgment.
And identity judgment has a long shadow. Once a system decides that some proof is required, every implementation detail becomes political and technical at the same time. Does the system remember the proof? Does it reveal only an attribute or the full person? Does it punish privacy routing? Can a user challenge a false block? Can the vendor repurpose the signal? Those details determine whether the system is protective or coercive.
The dirty frag lane adds another lesson. Controls fail, so the system has to survive failure.
Exactly. You patch because boundaries fail. You reduce privilege because patches lag. You monitor advisories because disclosure timing is imperfect. That same resilience mindset applies to identity systems. If age verification infrastructure fails, leaks, misclassifies, or gets captured by broader enforcement goals, the design should limit damage instead of expanding it.
That is a good bridge into local inference. Local compute is not automatically safer, but it gives the operator another mode when centralized systems are inconvenient or untrusted.
Local compute gives you autonomy at the cost of operational responsibility. You own updates, power, thermals, data handling, and model selection. Hosted systems give convenience and scale, but their policy and pricing can change. The older hardware benchmark matters because it hints that some autonomy remains practical for experimenters, even when the newest hardware is expensive.
There's also a practical habit here for daily operations. Classify each story by decision type. Some stories tell you to patch, some tell you to monitor policy, some tell you to test a hardware path, some tell you to wait for stronger evidence. mixing those categories is how people either overreact or miss the point.
That habit is very useful. Dirty Frag is a patch and advisory story. LVFS is a vendor trust and infrastructure funding story. The VPN item is a policy watch and architecture risk story. The Quinn Home Lab post is an experiment design story. The bun item is an evidence quality story. The response should match the type of signal, not the emotional intensity of the headline.
For today, that means the strongest decision is not a purchase decision or a migration decision. It is a watch posture.
Yes, watch posture is underrated. It means you know what future evidence would change your behavior. For the VPN lane, a concrete obligation would matter. For Dirty Frag, a distro advisory or patch status would matter. For LVFS, more vendor sponsorship would matter. For local inference, replicated measurements would matter. For bun, a clean official engineering note would matter.
So across the stories, the mature posture is neither anti-governance nor blindly pro-centralization.
Right, the mature posture is to ask what the control is for, what it collects, who funds it, who can audit it, how it fails, and what alternatives remain. That test makes LVF sponsorship look good, makes Dirty Frag patch discipline necessary, makes the VPN framing worth watching, and makes community local inference reports useful but provisional.
Before we close, let's return to the strongest single sentence from today. Mine is, age verification is not just content policy, it is identity infrastructure.
Mine would be, privacy tools become politically fragile when enforcement systems treat ambiguity as suspicious. The moment a VPN is framed as a loophole, ordinary privacy behavior risks being recoded as evasion. That does not mean the worst outcome happens, but it tells you where to watch.
The security sentence would be, a local exploit matters when it can complete a chain.
The Linux infrastructure sentence would be, the firmware commons got a real funding signal from major vendors, which is good news for users who depend on Linux as a first-class operating system.
For local inference, the sentence is, older hardware may still be useful if memory, interconnect, quantization, and serving configuration line up, but replicate before you buy or redesign.
And for bun, the sentence is, interesting compatibility claim, insufficient evidence for a main segment, wait for a cleaner official artifact.
So the final watch list is concrete. Watch EU language for actual obligations around VPNs, platforms, app stores, or identity vendors. Watch distro advisories for Dirty Frag. Watch whether more hardware vendors fund LVFS. Watch for replicated local inference reports on older multi-GPU setups. Watch for an official bun write-up.
And keep the larger model in mind. Infrastructure governance is not separate from security. The rules that decide who can access a service, who maintains firmware, who patches kernels, and who can run compute locally all shape user autonomy. Today's stories are small windows into that bigger system. Bye.
That is the briefing for today. The main development is the VPN and age verification debate because it shows how quickly a privacy tool can become a policy target. The practical move is to stay grounded, track concrete obligations, patch real systems, support maintainable infrastructure, and test local inference claims before making architecture decisions.
Do not let any single headline force a premature conclusion. The signal today is strong enough to update the watch posture, not strong enough to declare the future settled. That is a good place for a daily briefing to land.